Strange Brew Podcast, Season 1, Episode 156. Brewer home opener this week. Their first two games at home against the Twins on Tuesday and Wednesday. They split the series. We'll discuss that. The parking situation at AmFam Field, not ideal. Who could have seen this coming when they rolled out the new parking payment method about a month ago? Pretty sure we had that on the podcast and on the blog that this is probably not going to end the way they think it's going to. Disaster on Tuesday. We will break that down and get set for the Mariners series this weekend at AmFam Field, where parking attendants will be taking your money once again at AmFam Field. We're going to talk about one of the more pathetic two-game stretches that the Bucks have had in quite some time. Remember on the podcast last week when I said, oh, Washington, that'll be a win. Memphis will be a win. Toronto will be a win. Those are all easy wins. Oh, John. They lose both games on Tuesday and Wednesday, and I don't know what to expect tonight given the effort level we saw on Tuesday and Wednesday. We're going to talk about that, and then we're going to do a little mini Bucks State of the Union because the vibes are not good right now among Bucks fans, and I'm starting to go to the dark side. Normally, my vibes are positive vibes only. I'm starting to feel some of that negativity creep in now with the way they look this week. We'll talk about that. It's Final Four weekend as well. Women's tonight, men's tomorrow. Let's go.
On the ground, a chance here. Durham to Hardy to first. Hit time!
Yes!
The Brewers win! Yes!
Here comes Melvin to the 25, to the 20. Gordon 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Wisconsin! Record-breaking run!
Morgan, a smash up the middle. Base hit to center. Here comes Gomez. Around third. A throw, and the Brewers win!
Here's the snap. He looks, he throws, and
intercepted.
And there is your Super Bowl dagger.
Booker the drive, gets inside, leans in. Knocked away and stolen by Holiday. Phoenix has to foul, and a pinnacle ball throws it down.
Swinging fly ball in the right center. Broxton is there.
We've got a room at the top of the world tonight. The Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions.
It's also WrestleMania weekend. Remember Vince McMahon used to do those epic intros before the early WrestleManias? And every year it got more pronounced the way he said, WrestleMania. He always got more and more and more insane with the way that he said that. They started with WrestleMania 1. There's actually a whole montage. Somebody put together a montage of all of the intro packages before every WrestleMania. And he's kind of WrestleMania. He's more normal in WrestleMania 1. And then he just leaned into it more and more and more. I think I've got one loaded up here. This is from WrestleMania 6, where the Ultimate Warrior and Hulk Hogan were the main event that night, and they each had a title belt. My whole life at 7 years old revolved around this WrestleMania, where you had two good guys against each other, which never happened, and Ultimate Warrior was the Intercontinental Champion, and Hulk Hogan was the Heavyweight Champion, and who are we going to root for in this, because we like them both, and it was a stunner when the Ultimate Warrior won. But the intro package to this WrestleMania is just
powerful
epic.
Forces. But of all the forces in the universe, the two most powerful,
that voice.
Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, prepare to explode. Champion versus champion, title for title. It's the ultimate challenge. It's WrestleMania.
The big band music in the back. This is what I grew up with. Just epic WrestleMania. It's actually not too bad in terms of my impersonations. That's not too bad. Now I'm going to have a cough the rest of the podcast. I should have done that at the end instead of the beginning. My throat's a little clamped up now. It is WrestleMania weekend. I don't watch it much anymore, although The Rock has kind of gotten me back into watching SmackDown here and there. At some point many years ago, we started our YouTube TV subscription. And at some point, something must have been on SmackDown that I wanted to see, like The Rock or like an old wrestler was coming back that I kind of wanted to see. So I just set up a recording, and then I never watch him, but it records it every week. and it's been doing that for like 3 or 4 years. Well, since The Rock's been back in the mix, I've kind of been fast-forwarding through all the other parts, but then getting to the Rock parts, and they're trying to bring back Villain Rock, which is the best Rock. Heel Rock is the best Rock, where he is talking trash to all the different crowds he's involved in. My guess is he turns back to Good Guy Rock by the end of this weekend. In fact, The Rock just had one this morning that was going viral. He was WrestleMania's in Philly. And he was, I guess, an hour late to some appearance that he was at. And he finally got there, and he was just agitating the crowd.
Because The Rock was supposed to be here at 4 o'clock. Is that why you're booing? You're booing because The Rock was a little late. Is that why you were booing? Why was The Rock late? You want to know? You want to know why The Rock was late? Are you sure?
That was in Philly.
You want to know why The Rock was late? He was watching YouTube, watching Jalen Hurts lose in the playoffs again.
Nobody's better. The thing is, it's so funny because The Rock is so beloved in wrestling circles and for the last 20-plus years. He was a bad guy to start the whole thing. His whole run was that he was not likable, but he had this force of nature personality that even when he was bad, you kind of liked him, and then he flipped into being a good guy for many, many years there and back and forth, but every time he tries to go back to villain, as good as he is on the mic and egging crowds on, we love him so much that even when he's telling us we suck, you know, it's like, tell me I suck, Rock. You know, just like, well, thank you. The first time he came back was in Salt Lake City. I think we played a clip of it on the podcast, and he had something disparaging to say about Salt Lake City and all the wives all the guys had in the crowd there. And even with the remarks he was making, they couldn't help but cheer him on. Yeah, you're right. We do. We're the worst. We're weird. It's just, it's so funny the crowd still cheer him on, even though they're trying to make him this villain heading into the weekend. Now, WrestleMania is different than when I was a kid. The last time I was really watching this was probably WrestleMania 18 or 19 or 20, maybe was probably the last one when The Undertaker came back as the Dead Man. That's probably the last one where I actually got the pay-per-view and watched it. It's so different now. It used to be that it was the longest pay-per-view of the year. And don't take for granted, I think we've talked about this, when I was a kid in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, you would order a pay-per-view, and it was a coin flip, whether or not it would work. And when you were supposed to watch it at a certain time, you'd flip it on. Sometimes it would work. Sometimes you'd get a black screen. Sometimes you'd get fuzz. Then you'd be on the phone with Charter Communications with some person across the sea that doesn't care about WrestleMania or your problems and is not going to offer you a refund. Now it's so simple. You order it, or you have the Peacock app or whatever. You just turn it on. It works almost 100% of the time. Don't take that for granted if you are of a different, of a younger generation. Because it wasn't always that way. But Mania was always like a three and a half hour show, whereas the rest of the pay-per-views were in the two and a half hour range. So it was always the longest of pay-per-view of the year. But now it's insane. It's two nights. It's Saturday and Sunday. And I think both shows are like 4 hours plus. Are you kidding me? Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? I know wrestling is massively popular again, but who in the hell do you think you are? Two nights, 4 hours apiece? I guess The Rock is involved in some kind of tag team match on Saturday night. And then that will, I'm sure, lead to him being a part of the main event on Sunday. And he's supposed to help Roman Reigns, but my guess is he flips and Roman Reigns finally loses the belt. Roman Reigns has been the champion for like 3 years or 4 years. He is approaching some kind of all-time record. I would be shocked if there's not a title change on Sunday night. But The Rock is involved, and that's kind of got me back in a little bit. Oh, WrestleMania, yeah, I remember them fondly. WrestleMania 5, the Mega Powers, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage and all that stuff. The Ultimate Warrior one, when Hogan took on Sergeant Slaughter at WrestleMania 7 and Sergeant Slaughter had become an Iraqi sympathizer, and they had some guy that looked like Saddam Hussein as the guy that brought him out to the ring. Might have been Saddam. I don't know. He's right there. We're looking for him. He's right there. Those are the WrestleManias I remember fondly. My dad had a guy that worked for him back in the late 80s, early 90s, and he would always get the pay-per-views. He was probably 20 years old at the time, and he would get all the pay-per-views, and then he'd tape them, even with the FBI warning at the beginning. He would tape them. That's always a reminder to click record. And then he would give them to my dad on Monday, and then Monday, Dad would pick me up from school, and he'd have the pay-per-view tape or the WrestleMania tape, and I couldn't wait to watch it. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I watched tapes of WrestleMania 5 and WrestleMania 6. I could tell you blow for blow how every match went, when this guy landed a punch, when this guy came off the top rope. I probably watched him 1,000 times when I was a kid. Those WrestleManias 5, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there. But that's how I watched him back in the day. Get him on tape the next day. Now, if you enjoy it, soak it in. I know people get excited for it. I just can't get behind 8 hours of content or 9 hours of content, an entire weekend dedicated to it. I can't do it. Now, if you ask me to watch a half an hour show, 10 episodes in a row, 12 episodes in a row of a 23-minute show on Hulu, sure, I'm in. But that's just a lot. 8+ hours, 9+ hours, I don't know. Maybe I will. I think I have Peacock. I think I have some kind of subscription that I'm sure I never ended. Maybe I can just watch the main event on Sunday. All right, let's get into it here. The Brewers, home opener on Tuesday. Do we want to talk about the parking first? We wrote a blog about this. This is the year we blogged about it maybe a month ago or a month and a half ago when the Brewers announced that they were going to attempt a new method of parking and paying for parking. And while I think in principle the idea of this makes sense, where instead of rolling into AmFam Field and there is a line all the way back to the interstate, the idea is you just park. The attendants, they filter you through, they show you where to park and all that still. But then once you get there, either you've already prepaid for parking on the app, or when you get there, once you get out of your car, you click on a QR code. I guess there's QR codes all over the place on light poles. Or there are links that you can click on, and then you just pay for parking. You enter in your license plate number, and you pay for your parking that way. So it just gets people in a little bit quicker to the game, and you're not just sitting in line and waiting for somebody to fumble with their cash or fumble with their card. It never ceases to amaze me in those situations where you have a line and you're waiting 10, 15, 20 minutes to park or do something, and then somebody gets up there and they're not ready. How do you not have your card ready? My wife and I just, we lose our minds on people like that when you're in line to park at AmFam Field or Lambeau Field. I know Lambeau's a little different, but whatever, a venue like that. And finally somebody gets to the front, and then they're just going for their wallet. What have you been doing the entire time? This is like a Jerry Seinfeld. This is like a Seinfeld script. What's the deal? What have you been waiting on? What are you doing? We've had 20 minutes to get your card ready or get your cash ready. What are you talking to them to? Why are you talking to them? Pay and move on. The idea, though, is that you get rid of that and you just get in, park, and then you handle it yourself. Well, as we blogged about when they announced this, you've just got a lot going on there. You've got a demographic maybe of people that don't have phones that will allow them to do that. So what do they do? I know that's a small number, but there are, I'm sure, folks out there that have flip phones still, or what is the cheaper brand, consumer cellular or whatever, that still have just regular phones and they just use them to text or call people. How do they pay for parking? Or how does that all work once you get in? And what if you can't, like the problem was on Tuesday, what if you can't connect to the internet or the QR code isn't working? There's just so many things that could have gone wrong. There was no chance this was going to go off without a hitch on Tuesday. And I actually kind of forgot about it until I hit Twitter up on Tuesday about an hour before first pitch or a couple hours before first pitch. And one of the Journal Sentinel guys, J.R. Radcliffe, put a tweet out and said, I'm hearing that there's some issues with people trying to pay on the new parking app. And I thought, oh, God, that's right. And then you saw in the comment section, can't connect, clicked on the QR code, have the app, can't get to it. I guess I don't even know. Is there a different app? I have the MLB Ballpark app. Always good to turn your face away from the mic, John. It's Radio 101. I have the MLB Ballpark app, like most people do, that has your tickets on there to get you in, and previously you could buy parking on that. Is that not the app, or is there now a separate app I'm going to have to download to park at AmFam Field? Well, it's not going to be that way for a while now. We'll get to that in a second. Maybe there's a whole different app I need to use, but everybody was saying, I'm clicking, and I cannot access this app. And then the Brewers had to put out a statement on their social media pages that we understand that people are having connectivity issues. I've got to find the Parks and Rec. One of the greatest lines in Parks and Rec history is the Andy Dwyer connectivity issues. I think I've got it here. Hold on. Let me get this cranked up here.
No, I can't go home. I have to get...
Well, that's your fever. Leslie, I typed your symptoms into the thing up here, and it says you could have network connectivity problems.
That's one of the funnier lines in Parks and Rec, and that was ad-lib. That was an ad-libbed line, network connectivity
thing
issues.
Thing up here, and it says you could have network connectivity problems.
So good. But the Brewers put out a statement that said, we realize people are not able to connect right now to the app or to the website or whatever it is, but we're sending our parking attendants around, and they're going to help you. How they would help him, I have no idea, other than staring at your phone and saying, huh, yeah, you can't connect. Okay. I have an idea. What if we just put the attendants at the entrance to the parking lot, and I'm just spitballing here, and we give them money, and they give us a parking ticket, and we do it that way, which is how it's going to be done now. Eventually, they had to issue a statement on the giant new video board at AmFam Field saying that you will not be ticketed for violations for that day because they realized there were issues. I would say maybe 80% of people did not have to pay on Tuesday for opening day. I'm not sure what happened to those fortunate folks who were able to connect and did pay for parking. Do they get a refund, you think? Probably not. There were a few, though, 20-25% that either prepaid, which I hope is on the MLB Ballpark app, or they were able to connect with one of the QR codes or the app or however they were doing it, and they were able to pay. One of the fortunate people that got to pay $25 for parking, meanwhile, everybody else got to park for free. So they're going back to the traditional method now. They're going back to having an attendant there to take your money or take your card or whatever. Be prepared when you get to the front of the row. And that's how they're going to do it for a while until they get this thing hashed out. I do think, and this is just pure speculation on my part, and I said this in the blog, not everybody's phone just works if you're not connected to Wi-Fi when you're in an area where a lot of people are trying to use their phones. Now, every stadium, for the most part, AmFam Field and Lambeau, they all have Wi-Fi. But I remember before that, in the years before, every stadium had somewhat reliable Wi-Fi that you can connect to once you get there. If you're just on your own data and you're in a venue with 25,000, 30,000, in Lambeau's case, 85,000 people, and you're just trying to use data, and everybody else around you is trying to use data, my phone works maybe 1 out of 10 times in those scenarios. If you put my phone in a ball game or a concert or something with a lot of folks eating up data, it just doesn't work. And I think that's the case for a lot of people. I call it my phone's social anxiety disorder, where when it gets around thousands of people, it just doesn't perform. It doesn't know what to do. I believe that probably is a part of the issue. I'd have to find out if the Wi-Fi from AmFam Field does extend all the way through every parking lot. To me, that seems like the solution. The company that came up with the app, they said they're working on some issues on their back end that were problems. But I think more often than not, that was probably the issue, where people were on their data and it was sold out. 42,000 people at AmFam Field. Everybody tries to get into the parking lot right when it opens on opening day so you can get the full 2.5 hours of tailgating. That's a thing, too. People line up every year. And with that amount of people all trying to access the parking app, so you figure, what, about a third or a half of them all have cars? And I think everybody trying to hop onto the same website or the same app at the same time, either it didn't work because of the data or it crashed the app. But I think maybe that's a solution, where if you can extend or power up the Wi-Fi at AmFam Field so you just get it when you're around in every parking lot, that might help people actually connect and be able to park. Just an idea. That could not be the solution at all. That couldn't be the problem at all. I just know that I run into that, and if you can't connect to the AmFam Field Wi-Fi in the parking lots, that was on Tuesday especially, a lot of people all trying to get on the same site on the same app at the same time. But for the time being, they're going back to traditional parking. Who could have seen this coming? Otherwise, Brewers split the series with the Twins. Side note, the Minnesota Twins hats are a disaster. Those are the Marlins. That's the Marlins logo. Every time they went to the dugout or to the field and I saw a Twins player or their manager, Rocco Baldelli, with that M on their hat, that's their new logo. It looks like the Marlins logo. It looks like the Miami Marlins are in town. They got to change that up. I actually thought the T and the C was a pretty sweet logo for the Twins, the Twin Cities. I don't understand what they're doing with that. They look like the Marlins. But they split the two games. The home opener had Jacob Junis making his debut for the Brewers. He was solid, like we've talked about with Junis. I think a good signing. He's a swing guy that you can use in the rotation when you have to, and right now they need him there because of the Wade Miley injury. But he's also a guy you can use in long relief, a guy you can use in short relief, in leverage situations out of the bullpen. I expect that he's going to be the Swiss Army knife. He will be utilized in a variety of ways, but because of the injury to Miley, he is starting to begin the year. And he went 4 innings and gave you one run. He's got a wicked slider, 4 innings of one-run ball. We had Yelly go deep early in that game. Brewers got a nice win on opening day in front of the home crowd and improved to 4-0. Good start to the Pat Murphy era in Milwaukee. Things fell a little flat then on Wednesday. They had a 3-1 lead, and the bullpen got chewed up. Now, one thing that this team has dealt with early in the year, I know it's very early in the year to talk about bullpen usage, although you saw it all over Twitter. It was funny to see Brewer fans on Twitter not turn on Pat Murphy, but it's so funny how quickly and how fickle sports fans are Coming out of that 3-2 win on opening day, the Brewers are 4-0. The vibes couldn't be better. The offense is making contact, putting balls in play. Starting pitching looks solid. Back end of the bullpen looks great. We love Pat Murphy and his attitude and this grizzled baseball guy attitude. The vibes are feeling good. This team feels like it's got some good energy to it. And then one game where you blow a lead, and all you saw on Twitter was, well, listen, I like Pat Murphy, but I mean, let's be honest here. You kind of blew it with the bullpen management. And then you saw other more extreme reactions of, well, there's a reason Pat Murphy hasn't been a manager at the major league level. And you saw it today. It's like, guys, it's the first loss of the year. They're going to lose games. They are probably going to lose between 75 and 80 games, hopefully no more than that. They are going to lose games this year. It was just very funny, the qualifiers of, boy, I like the way they start under Pat Murphy, but let's talk about that bullpen management. Well, I mean, guys are going to blow games sometimes. And they have had to go to the bullpen often. They've gotten a lot of short starts to begin the year, which is something you do anticipate to begin the year. And then the back-to-back Junis and Joe Ross starts did not help. So Junis, 4 innings. He was good, but 4 innings. So you've got to cover a lot of innings there from the bullpen in a tight game. And then on Wednesday, Joe Ross made his debut. I thought he looked all right. I think he was what you would expect from a guy who hasn't made a start in Major League Baseball since 2021. He's had injury issues. He was very good in AAA at the end of last year as he was on his road back to Major League Baseball. His Cactus League numbers were solid. More than anything, outside of the ERA and the pitches thrown, the strikeouts and all that, his velocity looks good. And his velocity looked good on Wednesday as well. He was mid to upper 90s with the fastball. He's got a pretty good slider too. But you would anticipate a little bit of a jittery situation for Joe Ross, first start in almost 2.5 years in Major League Baseball. He only goes 3 2/3, doesn't give up a run, struck out 3. He was erratic, he walked 5, going to have to correct that, and that was an issue for him during Cactus League action. But again, for a guy that's coming back from 2+ years of injuries, I don't know that you can go out there and expect him to give you 6 innings of one-run ball with 7 strikeouts and 1 walk. There is going to be a feeling out process there. Overall, I thought the results were pretty good from Joe Ross, but you get back-to-back short starts. You get a 4-inning start from Junis on Tuesday, 3 2/3 from Joe Ross on Wednesday. And again, you're put in a spot where you have to cover a lot of innings from the bullpen. Yoel Piamps came in the 7th inning, just didn't have it. And he had not given up a run. That was his 4th appearance already in 5 games for the Crew. That's because they've been playing a lot of tight games early. So he's been used quite a bit. And bullpen pitchers, like starting pitchers, coming out of Cactus League action, aren't really fully 100% ready for a full workload. And he's been used a lot. Didn't give up a run in his first 3 appearances, gave up a lot of runs on Wednesday. Just didn't have it. They pull him once it became a 3-3 game, and then they almost got out of it. Bryce Wilson with 2 guys on, 2 outs, and a 2-strike count just about was out of that inning. 1 strike away from getting out of the 7th inning in a 3-3 tie. Gives up a 3-run home run. That obviously flips the game. Twins take a 6-3 lead, and they win 7-3 on Wednesday. So you split the two in the politest rivalry in sports. The Twins-Brewers rivalry. My wife and I went to Target Field many years ago, pre-pandemic, to 2 Brewers-Twins games at Target Field in Minnesota, which, as a side note, is a fabulous stadium. If you ever have a chance to go there, it's right downtown Twin Cities. It's a lot of fun, a lot of bars around that area and restaurants, too, around that area. Fun to walk around down there. But it was funny because everybody was so nice. Everybody was Midwest nice in that Minnesota Brewers rivalry. You think back to some of the old AL matchups in the AL Central and the proximity, you'd think there'd be more bad blood there. But it's not like going to a Brewers-Cubs game or a Brewers-White Sox game where things can get a little contentious and get a little over the top. And you see some brawls sometimes and guys getting kicked out of the stadium. It is so Midwest nice in this Twins-Brewers rivalry. That's why I call it the politest rivalry in sports. You split the two. The Brewers are 4-1 through 5 games in the Pat Murphy era. Good matchup this weekend at AmFam Field. This Mariner team is a team, I think that was in the playoffs last year. Hold on, let me click on Seattle. That AL West, that whole division where you've got Texas, who won the World Series, and Seattle and Houston out there, and Oakland. Did you see this Oakland A's situation? I don't even know what their manager's or what their owner's name is. What a disaster. They were thinking of moving to Vegas, I think, already this year, but then something happened with the stadium plans there. They are going to move to Vegas, but it's going to be 3 years. They're playing, I think, at the Coliseum this year still, and then they signed a 3-year deal in Sacramento to play at a minor league stadium with a seating capacity of 11,000. What's AmFam's capacity? Almost 46,000. And most major league parks are between 40 and 45. The smallest parks are the oldest parks. Wrigley, I think, only holds 38. Fenway Park, I think, holds 37 or 38. But they are going to play starting next year through 2028, 2025 through 2028. They are going to play in Sacramento at a minor league stadium with 10,000 seats and some grass seats, and that's it. Now, you could say with the attendance that they've had, that's more than enough for them, John, which is probably true. But that is just wild that a major league team is going to play at a minor league stadium for 3 years, waiting for the Vegas construction to finish. Okay, Seattle did not make the playoffs last year, but they were right there, 88-74 last year. That's a good team with Julio Rodriguez leading the way. They come into tonight 3-4. It's a good pitching matchup tonight. Freddy Peralta is back on the hill for the Crew. What a debut he had in New York last week. Logan Gilbert is going for the Mariners. He is their ace. He's a guy who had 13 wins 2 years ago, 13 wins last year, ERAs in the low to mid threes. This is their guy. This is their ace. Logan Gilbert and Freddy Peralta tonight. See how the rest of the pitching matchups line up here for the three-game set. You've got DL Hall then back on Saturday, and it'll be Colin Ray coming off a pretty good start in his debut in New York last week, 5 innings of 1-run ball. Colin Ray will wrap up the series. It is 7:10 tonight, 6:10 on Saturday, and 1:10 afternoon start time. And then the Brewers will finally hit the road. It's been quite a beginning to the season for the NL Central. The Pirates are still right there at 6-1. Brewers are 4-1, Reds 4-2, the Cubs are getting it together, 4-2, and St. Louis has won 3 in a row. They are 4-4 on the year. Finally, you get a division matchup on Monday, first of 4 in Cincinnati, then you go to Baltimore. I don't think they're going to see Corbin Burns, not at least right now, not with the scheduled starters right now at next weekend on April 12th, 13th, and 14th. So you get your first division matchup starting on Monday, 4 games set at Great American Ballpark, taking on the Reds. Now we get a run of games. It's always disappointing when you get to the beginning of the year. We've all been chomping at the bit for baseball, and then you get these off days right away. Brewers had 2 off days this week on Monday and yesterday on Thursday. Now they start a run of games where I think for about 2 weeks straight they'll have a game on every day. 7:10 first pitch on the way tonight. What else happened real quick? I just want to go through my Twitter here. I know there were some other things. I know on Tuesday, too, Bob Uecker got a standing ovation. That was great to see. That was a fun moment at AmFam Field on opening day. Very much deserved. And then he did call the game on Wednesday right away. And we did get on Wednesday the first ever home run from Jackson Churio. And here is the Bob Uecker call of it. Hold on here. Let me unmute this and turn this on. And here we go.
Ready to work. Here it is. Line to right center.
It's just great to hear Bob on that kind of a call. And he did work the first 2 games. We'll see if he works this weekend as well. But he did get a standing ovation on Tuesday. We also almost had a near collision in the first sausage race of the year on Tuesday. I talked about this on the air. We didn't write a blog about it. Twins outfielder Byron Buxton was just on his way out to his outfield position and didn't realize the sausages were bearing down on him, and we almost saw him get truck-sticked by the Brat racing sausage.
Now the first sausage race of the year. Look out, Byron!
I mean, he barely got out of the way.
Now the first sausage race of the year. Look out, Byron! The Bratwurst.
With that Bratwurst, when the Bratwurst trade is on the tracks, could you imagine if he would have gotten run over there and ends up on the IL? It would have been funny to see, because you get the IL designations all the time whenever any player goes on the disabled list or the injured list, and they have a turned ankle. They got a 10-day IL for Byron Buxton with a hamstring injury or whatever you have. That would have been very funny to see Byron Buxton on the 10-day IL sausage pileup, run over by a Brat. He very close. It got very close. A teammate had to pull him back in to not get hit there. But it was a fun opening 2 days at AmFam Field, and they stay there tonight for a 7:10 first pitch with the Mariners.
He's fine. New topic.
The Milwaukee Bucks. This was bad, guys. Last week, remember, we were talking about the futures bet for the Bucks to win the Central, which I don't even know. They still have a 2-game lead. The Cavs keep on losing. And there's only 6 games left. They are still the heavy favorites to win the division. Hopefully we cash that ticket. The vibes are really bad. Remember last week I said going through the schedule, well, we were talking about it within the context of the bet I made. Well, they've got the Wizards. That's a win. They're going to win against the Wizards. And the bad Grizzlies team, that's a win. And a tanking Raptors team, that's a win. Remember that whole segment we did last week? John, you moron.
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
Idiot sandwich what?
An idiot sandwich, Chef Ramsay.
Two of the more frustrating losses in a year that has had frustrating losses, a lot of them. even last week, you go back to that double overtime game against the Lakers, the effort they had in the first half against the Pelicans. In a year that has had a lot of that, those were two of the most frustrating losses, and they happened on back-to-back days. I can't fathom how they're losing to teams like this. Now, I get there were injuries. Let's talk about them. Tuesday, you're in Washington. No Dame Lillard, who we thought was missing games because of personal reasons, which was the designation he got. And remember, we discussed it could be that his son was celebrating a birthday and he doesn't see his kids as much as he wants to, and that's a part of the off-the-court stuff that's been bothering Dame this year. So understood, you go and celebrate with your son. Well, then on Tuesday, he pops up on the injury report with a groin injury. I guess he suffered the game before he left for personal reasons. You didn't have Dame. You still had Giannis, and you still had Middleton and everybody else on the floor on Tuesday playing a 14-win. 14 wins on the year. 14-60 Washington Wizards on the road, a team that is actively trying to lose games with a G League roster and trying to give themselves better odds at the number one overall pick in the draft lottery. Those Washington Wizards. And it was a close game the whole way, and the Bucks could never really get in front. Down the stretch, the Wizards made all the plays. Giannis had a big old triple-double. Middleton was okay. I think he had 22 on Tuesday. But nobody else could do anything. And it just seemed like at the end of that game on Tuesday, the Wizards players, those G League players who are fighting for their lives, fighting to stay in the league, fighting for contracts, they just wanted it more. Every loose ball, every offensive rebound, every big shot in the fourth quarter. And they win 117-113. Then you come home on Wednesday and you're thinking, okay, you lost to a 14-win team that is actively trying to lose games. No way on back-to-back nights do you lose to a similar team in the Grizzlies, a 25-win team, but they were 25-50 going into Wednesday. No way that happens on back-to-back nights. The injury situation for the Bucks was worse on Wednesday. They had no Middleton, who was still not playing back-to-back games, no Patrick Beverley, who is battling a variety of injuries right now, and you had no Dame still out with the groin injury. And Giannis, who we're going to talk a little bit about more about here in a second and the injuries he's dealing with, he was on the floor. Even with no Middleton and no Beverley and no Dame, and at best it looked like a 70% Giannis, even with all of that, you have to beat. If you're a title contending team, if you consider yourself to be a title contending team, you must beat a 25-win team with a minor league roster that is trying to lose games. I cannot emphasize this point enough. You lost on back-to-back nights to two teams that would prefer to lose games. That's who you lost to. And I get it. You were thin on Wednesday, but so are the Grizzlies. The only regular player the Grizzlies had available on Wednesday was Jaren Jackson Jr., and he ate the Bucks' lunch. He ate Brook Lopez's lunch. He went into his refrigerator and ate his dinner. He had the last piece of birthday cake. Brook had a birthday on Monday. He ate that up that Brook had been saving for the end of the week. He ate it all. I mean, Brook could not defend that guy, and he scored 30-plus. But still, that was the only regular player the Grizzlies had, and you just lost to them before the All-Star break when they were still a G League team. So you get swept by a 25-win Grizzly team. And again, down the stretch run, it just looked like the Grizzlies wanted it more. Those guys were attacking the rim. They were getting offensive rebounds, getting putbacks. Bucks got a brief lead in the third quarter, like a 10-point lead, 69-59. I thought, okay, they got a 10-point lead. There's a long way to go yet, but they have a 10-point lead. They've started to take control. They were down by 4 at halftime. So they were up by 10 in that moment. And then they led a 12-0 run to the Grizzlies to end the third quarter. You end up in a tight fourth quarter game. And just like on Tuesday, every 50-50 ball, every offensive rebound, everything, the Grizzlies wanted it more. And they knocked down shots. The Bucks were knocking down threes at a high rate up until the fourth quarter on Wednesday. That's what kept them in the game. And you just thought to yourself, I think at one point they were shooting 60% from beyond the arc, and they were still down, which tells you something. But I remember thinking, God, if these threes just stop going down, they're in trouble. And that's what happened. They went 0-for-10 on their last 10 threes in the fourth quarter. And Giannis got his teammates pretty good looks. They just couldn't knock him down. Pat Connaughton, who was a point guard on Wednesday because of the injuries to Dame and Beverley, you don't really have a true point guard. Pat Connaughton, point guard Pat, was running the offense. He had open looks he couldn't knock down. Bobby had open looks he couldn't knock down. Malik had open looks he couldn't knock down. Giannis had a couple of threes because he was wide open. He couldn't knock him down. And the Grizzlies win 111-101. Just two infuriating losses back-to-back on Tuesday and Wednesday to two G League teams that do not want to win games. Now you end up with the Raptors in town tonight. The Bucks are 16.5-point favorites. I would almost put money on the Raptors here. The Raptors have been getting their doors blown off. They have not been hiding the fact that they also are a team that wants to lose games and improve their draft lottery position. They have a complete G League roster at this point. The Bucks, what they're going to have on the floor tonight, I am not sure. And honestly, with the way Giannis looked by the end of that game on Wednesday, and I guess credit to him, you always admire one of the things we admire the most about Giannis, in addition to the exploits on the floor and the defense and the rebounding and the assists and the points and the crazy dunks and block shots and all the stuff he does. He really isn't all that much of a load management guy. I feel like there are a few games every year where they force him interesting, which might have to happen tonight and might have to happen this weekend as well. He just is not a guy who subscribes to that. In fact, Doc talked about it at the end of Wednesday's game when they asked him about how hobbled Giannis looked at the end of the game on Wednesday. And Doc said, in retrospect, I should have pulled him after the third quarter, but I kept asking him and he wanted to go back in. And I kept asking the trainers and the trainer said he was okay, so I put him back in, but I regret that. As a side note, Doc, you're the head coach. Pull him out of the goddamn game. You can take him out of the game. You are the head coach of the team. I'll tell you something about Doc Rivers. Remember when they hired Doc Rivers? Let's just hit the park and ride with Doc Rivers here for a second. Then we'll get back on the State of the Union. Remember when he got hired and we played that clip of J.J. Redick, who used to play for Doc in L.A.? And J.J. went on that whole rant on First Take about how Doc Rivers never takes accountability and this has been a problem with him his entire career and he won the title, yes, but he always throws his players into the bus. It's everybody's fault but Doc's. And we kind of scoffed at it at the time. I'm starting to see some of it. I'm starting to see it because after every loss, he throws the players under the bus, which I don't hate, but I think it does become grating on the players when you do it every single time after every loss. I don't mind accountability. This is the Matt LaFleur syndrome. I don't mind accountability until you do the same accountability speech every time. And he talked about how the players weren't up to it on the road on Tuesday in Washington. Then he talked about the kind of the training staff, and they said he was okay, but he didn't look okay. I have eyes. Doc, you are the head coach. If something doesn't look right with your once-in-a-lifetime superstar power forward, who you need as close to 100% as you can get if you intend to do anything in the playoffs this year, take him out of the game, even if it... Of course Giannis wants to play. That's his M.O. You could have a fractured leg, and if you ask Giannis if he wants to go in the game, he's going to want to go into the game. You have to be better than that. You have to be the person that says no. If you have eyes, like he said, I have eyes, I can see he was not right, then take him out. You're the head coach. All right. Now let's get back to it. So I don't know what's going to happen tonight with Toronto. And I honestly, at this point, you've got 6 games left in the regular season. Let's do a little mini State of the Union here. This has been one of the most frustrating seasons that I can remember as a Bucks fan in my lifetime, and that's saying something. I lived through the 90s. I lived through all of the 2000s outside of 2001. I mean, there have been some miserable seasons from 1992 or 91 through 2017 when Giannis really came on and this team started to look like it could have an MVP-caliber player and could be a contender. There's maybe one good year in there. This has been so frustrating as a Bucks fan, and I think it's especially frustrating given the expectations we had coming in. You trade for Dame in September, and oh my God, we've got this once-in-a-lifetime point guard to pair with our once-in-a-lifetime power forward. They immediately were the betting favorites to win the title. All of these great expectations coming into the year as the precursor, and then for the way this season has played out, where they just can't be consistent. One night you beat a contender by 30 points and you look like you can win a title. Then you lose 2 games in a row to a G League team. And it's been up and down like that all year. And with the expectations coming into the year and how it's played out, that's only exacerbated things. The expectations compared to how things have gone. Now, like we said, you've got 6 games left in the regular season. And you don't have any more time to work it out on the floor. There's no more time to get the chemistry worked out, to get anything worked out in 6 regular season games. So I think at this point, the best move is to just rest everybody that you can and get them as close to 100% as you can. Forget about the Central Division Championship bet or staying in the 2 seed, which you might do anyway with the way everybody's playing behind the Bucks. You might end up staying in the 2 seed if you just win one more of these 6 games with the way everybody underneath them are losing games as well. But you're out of time to figure things out in the regular season. The only hope this team has to make a deep run, I think, is to have Giannis, Dame, and Middleton on the floor and as close to 100% as you can get. When you look at when those 3 guys are on the floor together, this is one of the best net rating teams in the league, one of the best offenses in the league. Their defense is adequate enough. This is an elite team when those 3 guys are on the floor, which hasn't happened a ton this year with the nagging injuries and the personal reasons, and Chris doesn't play back-to-backs and all sorts of reasons. But if we're clinging to hope as Bucks fans, and I think that's where we're at right now as Bucks fans with the way this season has gone, you've got to have those three guys as close to healthy as possible. So is Giannis not going to like it if he has to be benched tonight or benched for the next week to get him close to 100%? Maybe that's just what you have to deal with. But if this team is going to make any kind of a run and salvage what has been a weird and frustrating year, you have to have those three guys as close to healthy as you can get and on the floor when the playoffs hit in, 2 weeks from today, or a little less than 2 weeks from today. They've got this weekend a full week of regular season games. I think the regular season wraps up, not this weekend, obviously, but next Sunday on the 14th. And then I would guess first round playoff games will start that Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday. So if this is I think the best thing they can do strategically is to rest these guys and make sure that Dame isn't being nagged by a groin injury, or Giannis isn't being nagged by a hamstring injury or an Achilles injury. Middleton maybe plays tonight. Middleton, I don't know that he's actually hurt. I just think this is a situation where we're probably not going to see Chris Middleton play the second game of back-to-backs, maybe for the rest of his career. I mean, you hope that's not the case, but it seems like that's kind of the path we're on right now. He's probably the healthiest of the three, so maybe he plays tonight. But the best path now with the playoffs coming up in less than 2 weeks, I think, is to just rest as many guys as you can. And wherever you fall in the standings is where you fall. The diehard Bucks fans like myself, we've been just telling ourselves this whole roller coaster of the year that they'll flip the switch in the playoffs. Don't worry. They'll flip the switch. Alexa, does a switch exist? Is there a switch? Alexa, is there a playoff switch? Because that's how we've coped. That's how the diehards like myself have coped with the frustrating, inconsistent nature of this season that has been pockmarked by annoying losses to bad teams. That's how we've coped, by saying this team will figure it out in the playoffs. The regular season doesn't matter. This team will figure it out in the playoffs. We learned last year the regular season doesn't matter. They had the most wins in the NBA. Every path to a championship went through Milwaukee. And what happened? They were out in five games. They won one playoff game. So based on that and the talent on this team, we've just said to ourselves in the mirror, forget about that loss to the Grizzlies. Forget about that loss to the Wizards. Once this team gets to the playoffs, it's a veteran team. It's an old team. It's a veteran team that has guys that have won titles. They will figure it out in the playoffs. Well, now with the limited sample size you have and the nagging injuries you have, that switch better be real, because I could see this team making a deep run, or I could see them again out in the first round to the Miami Heat or to the Sixers, who just got Joel Embiid back. That's what the first round matchup is looking like. It's looking like if the Bucks stay at the 2 or even the 3, it's looking that they'll either play a Pacer team they lost 4 or 5 to, the Miami Heat. We know the playoff history there is not good, with the exception of the title run year where they swept the Heat, which seems improbable when you think back to that run and all the things that had to happen, the Kevin Durant toe and overcoming Giannis's injury and down 2-0 in the finals. The fact that they swept the Heat and blew them out in games 2 through 4 that season may be the most crazy part of that run in 2021. But it's looking like you're either going to get the Pacers, you're either going to get the Heat, or you're going to get Joel Embiid back with the Sixers as a first-round matchup. And with how up and down this year has been, if there isn't a switch to flip and this team doesn't flip it into high gear for the playoffs, they could be out again in 5 games or 6 games in the first round with a matchup like that. It's the Raptors at home tonight. Everybody's listed as questionable right now in this game. Giannis is listed as questionable. Dame, Chris, again, not to bemoan the point. It just feels like at this point, rest as many guys as you can for as long as you can, to where you're not going to have a ton of rust either, and just get them as close to healthy as you can get. You've got Toronto on Friday. You've got New York on Sunday. They're still kind of trying to fight for a 3 seed or a 2 seed. You've got Boston next Tuesday. I guess that's probably on national TV. Who the regulars will be playing there, I don't know. And then you wrap up with a good Orlando team that's a 4 seed right now. You're at OKC and at Orlando to end the year. I just think with that schedule and with all of the injuries they have right now to some of their star players, if you can get them healthy, that should be priority 1 and 2. For the rest of the last week of the regular season.
Let's switch topics.
Let's talk college hoops real briefly, and then we're going to hit on the NFL real quick and a big trade this week in the NFL. College hoops tonight on the women's side, which, by the way, that Iowa-LSU game was a ratings monster. Had higher ratings than some of the NBA Finals games last year. I told you, we talked about this before the tournaments even started. There are better storylines and more identifiable players or stars in the women's game right now, and that's led by Caitlin Clark. That game was as advertised. Angel Reese turned her ankle early. That seemed to limit her a bit, but she was still really good. A massive double-double. Clark was hitting threes from Steph Curry range, knocked down 9 threes. The Hawkeyes went 94-87, so a high-scoring close game, and the ratings were 12.3 million. The previous record was 9.9. That was the title game between Iowa and LSU last year. They get to 12.3 million with that game on, what night was that? Was that Thursday? Or might have been Monday, last week Monday. So the Final Four on the women's side is tonight, and honestly, this Connecticut matchup with Iowa might be an even better game than the Iowa-LSU game. You've got Paige Beckers, who was sort of Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark burst onto the scene. You've got her and the Huskies and all the history there and Gino Auriemma, and that team was in the national title game, it felt like, every year for about 10 or 15 years there. They take on Iowa, and then the early game is NC State. How about NC State? Two teams in the Final Four on the women's and the men's side. NC State takes on unbeaten number one South Carolina. That is 6 o'clock tonight. Then the UConn-Iowa matchup is 8 o'clock tonight. I think we're going to end up with Iowa in a narrow win, and it's going to be Iowa-South Carolina. The crazy thing about the women's tournament, you've got all these storylines with Caitlin Clark, and you've got storylines with Paige Beckers and UConn, and Angel Reese and LSU. Meanwhile, South Carolina is undefeated, and they have been just rolling over people. If Caitlin Clark does win a national championship this year and brings that title back to Iowa, what a path to beat the reigning champs in LSU, to get past UConn, and then they likely have to get past an undefeated South Carolina team. That would be a heck of a road to hoe to get the national championship, which would be coming up, I guess, on Sunday then probably, right? On the men's side, like we talked about, I don't think there's a whole lot of guesswork here. If you could put a bet down, I looked at it this morning. You can bet on who you think the national title game will involve. So instead of betting, I guess you could just parlay the winners then too. But you can make that bet. Will it be Purdue-UConn? Will it be UConn-NC State? Will it be Purdue-Alabama? You can bet on every possible matchup. The Purdue-UConn potential matchup is paying minus 300, which means you have to bet $300. And then if you win, you get your 300 back, and then you win 100 bucks. So you have to bet 300 to win 100. It just feels like that's the collision course. Like we talked about on Monday's podcast, of the two, the only one that I can see being an upset, I think, is going to be NC State over Purdue, and even that seems a little far-fetched. It will be fun to watch this DJ Burns center matching up with Zach Edey. Doesn't have the height of Edey. Burns is 6'9", 6'10", Edey 7'3", but he's big. Like we talked about, big boy DJ Burns pushing about 300 pounds. It'll be intriguing to watch that matchup, NC State against Purdue. That's the early game, 5:09 on Saturday, 7:49 between Alabama and UConn, but this feels like it's almost certainly going to be Purdue and UConn. And that could be maybe a fun game to watch. I don't think I've ever had fun watching a Zach Edey-Purdue game. Perhaps, though, the matchup with Burns on Saturday, and then if Purdue does move on and UConn does move on, the Klingon, is that his last name? Klingon? The Klingon, Donovan Klingon. The matchup between him, he goes about 7'1", and Edey in the potential national championship game. That could be interesting to watch as well. But the Final Four is on the way. Yeah, Donovan Kling, how tall is he? He's 7'1". So he's 7'1", Edey's 7'4". They both block a billion shots. That could be a fascinating matchup to watch if that's what the matchup ends up being. And I'd be stunned if that's not the matchup coming out of Saturday's Final Four. Real quick, let's... Oh, new topic.
Right, on that topic.
Let's end on some NFL. Stephon Diggs got traded to the Houston Texans. The Texans are going to be a favorite to win the AFC, I think. C.J. Stroud burst onto the scene last year as a rookie quarterback, and he had a lot of good young wide receivers, a lot like the Packers do, and now you give him a number one. They trade for Stephon Diggs from the Bills. I don't know what the Bills are doing. The Bills are going to enter kind of a soft rebuild. Anytime you have a quarterback in his prime, a once-in-a-lifetime quarterback, and I think Josh Allen's 27 years old, so he's just at the beginning of his prime. Anytime you've got an MVP-caliber quarterback entering the beginning of his prime, if you can do a 2 to 3 year rebuild there, you have to do it. Anytime that opportunity presents itself, you must do it. I would guess the Bills obviously are going to draft a receiver early in the draft, but if you're a Buffalo Bills fan and you've been riding this wave for 2 or 3 years where they win a bunch of regular season games, can't quite get it figured out in the playoffs, but you feel like with Josh Allen and the weapons you had around him, you feel like that you have a chance in every game, and now, yeah, you just don't have much at wide receiver, and you've got this once-in-a-lifetime quarterback. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. But it seems like they're at least in store for a year or two. Rebuilds in the NFL, with the way the salary structure works and with the draft and everything, they don't last as long as they used to. That's why I always kind of scoff at, before last year, you heard a lot of people chirping Packer fans about the beginning of the Jordan Love era when everybody thought Jordan Love wasn't going to be good. And everybody said, oh, get ready for the 80s, man. Get ready for the 70s and 80s. You're going to have 20 years where it's a bad Packer team. the NFL landscape is so different now from when it, what it was in that era. It would be almost impossible, unless you're the Bears, it would be almost impossible to be that bad, that like the Packers were in the 70s and 80s. It would be almost impossible in the free agency era and the draft turning over rosters and how big the salary caps are. It would be impossible to be bad for 25 years in a row, I think. I'm pretty sure. And even the Bears have had some, even with all the bad quarterback issues, they've had some runs. They were in the Super Bowl in 2006. So that's not likely to happen. Rebuilds happen quicker, but it is baffling. If you're a Bills fan, if you're Pinto Ron, who's the guy that gets the ketchup and the mustard on him? They rain ketchup and mustard on him at the beginning of every home game, Pinto Ron. If you're Pinto Ron and now you're staring down maybe a 7-win year or an 8-win year, and when are we going to be a Super Bowl contender again? I don't know how you digest that. That's a tough one. Stephon Diggs going to Houston. But the Texans, man, the Texans. If you were somebody that put money on the over on the Texans season win total, the season win totals came out already. The Packers are 9.5, so they'd have to win 10. I love that. I love it. They were 9-8 last year, so it's 9.5 this year. The Texans coming off of a shockingly good year, making the playoffs in their new head coach's run and in C.J. Stroud's first year. Their over-under was also 9.5, I think, or maybe even 8.5 coming into this year. If you bet on that already and then they make this move, you're sitting in a catbird seat, then you would think. Obviously, a lot of things can happen, and injuries in the NFL are a big factor, but if you put a bet down when those lines first came out on the Texans, already thinking that they could probably get over, and then they get Stephon Diggs on top of that to pair with their young ascending quarterback, you got to be feeling pretty good about that. All right, we will come back after it on Monday. We'll be recapping the Final Four. We'll see what the Bucks do this weekend. They've got the Raptors tonight and the Knicks on Sunday. We'll recap that as well as the Brewer weekend and get set for the national championship game in college hoops on Monday night. Have a happy, safe weekend. We'll chat with you then.